All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Student Success Exchange Podcast, a series of deep conversations about real student stories between a student affairs professional and the students he serves. I'm your host, David Ipyam. I'm a student affairs and services practitioner by profession. And when I'm not in the office, I work with fellow colleagues and professionals to elevate their game through change leadership, that's through davidipyam.com, with families to learn martial arts through mindovermatterkarate.com, and with couples to maximize their relationships through relationshipzen.ca. I nerd out about anything leadership development, including student success. Before I introduce the next guest, I have to apologize in advance because the sound quality is not the greatest, because I actually forgot the key to the recording studio. So please forgive me, especially because our guest for episode 5 has a lot of amazing things to share. Allow me to introduce Mujtaba. Mujtaba is a cis African Canadian male that grew up in the neighboring community by York University, Toronto, Ontario. In this episode, he'll talk about the economic hardships, family difficulties, racism, and other dynamics growing up in the community. While he faced many difficult obstacles growing up, he can confidently say that he is living his best. He is currently a senior don or residence life assistant of one of the residences on campus, but that is not his only identity. He is also a student, friend, son, writer, creator, and more. Hope you enjoy this episode, and if you love it, please share it with somebody else. All right, I am here on the Student Success Exchange Podcast with our guest, Mujtaba. Welcome.
Thank you, David, for having me. Again, my name is Mujtaba. In my final year of my BSW at York University, I am also a senior don of Winter's Residence, and I have a bunch of other identities.
All right, awesome. Would you like to share some of those identities, and then we'll go into...
100%. I am someone who loves writing. I am someone who is very interested in business, but in the education of like youth through business. But I'll get on about that a little bit like later on. Uh-huh. I am interested in being an educator. I am interested in social justice. I am also a brother. I am a friend. There's just so many identities that I can identify.
Yeah, now Mujtaba, we haven't met until like 15 minutes ago.
Yes.
So you're recommended through Jennifer Sipo Smith.
Yeah.
So thank you for connecting us. And so what I did is I Googled your name, first thing I did, right? And then I found that you had done a video with York University, People of YU.
Yeah.
And I captured a couple quotes from that video, and I thought maybe that's a good way to get to know each other, but also for the audience to get to know you.
Okay.
So now one of the things is you say you enjoy writing now, but I gather from your story based on the video that you were saying before, and I think this was high school,
yes,
or maybe before, reading, writing didn't come so easily. You weren't doing well in school until you, I think, chose to get involved. Is it what happened?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you like to walk us through that?
I think for me, again, when I was in elementary school, like from grade like 1 to 5, I was decent at school. Like I was glad I could read and write and all that kind of stuff, and like math and all that was fine. But then when I hit, I guess you could say like middle school and like puberty hit, I guess I was more, my direction was more focused on just like making friends and just kind of like being stereotypical like black male.
Mm-hmm.
In the area that I grew up in, it was kind of like, it felt kind of weird that, to the point where sometimes if I did well in school, it felt like I wasn't like
you felt like you were being judged?
Yeah. It felt weird. I don't know why. Like, that's a weird thing. It was like growing up over there. And so I kind of just stopped really like I would still do well enough so that my parents wouldn't be like angry, like probably around the seas and like me.
Right, but not as well as you knew you could.
Yeah, 100%. Like I would literally do worse on assignment than I would be able to if I actually put in my full energy.
Right. So then at what point did you decide, I'm going to do this, despite the judgments or the pressure that you felt or the perception of pressure?
I think after time, after my middle school were majority of my friends, it was a lot of my friends disappeared, whether they just kind of dropped out of school or just didn't really like some of them just disappeared without a trace. And then like it kind of forced me into this like, I was kind of like isolated. I felt like lonely. And then I just ended up making friends with other people. I made friends with diverse groups of individuals, not just people who looked at me. And that helped me along my journey. I had friends who were more like motivating and like, yo, why are you like you're better in school? And I remember it was around grade 10 and a friend of mine was like, yo, like, why aren't you, I know you can do better than this, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I don't know, I just like, I'm just so used to not like trying and all that. But I felt like it was like cool to not try and
right.
like not like like do well in school. I felt like, hey, yo, look at me, I'm not doing good. But I'm still surviving, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
A lot of it really didn't make sense, but it makes sense.
No, that's what you mean. That's what the construct of what you thought you had to embody
yeah.
dictated at the time, until it was challenged and that, you know, your social circle changed.
100%.
And that kind of enabled a different construct to dominate.
Yeah.
One where you're like, well, I can be cool and do well in school.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of what happened there?
100%. And then I just really, I started to enjoy learning. Again, I
got
love it. Indeed, it was actually, so you know how in high school everyone needs to do 40 hours of community service?
Yeah.
So I forgot, so I don't know how I just got involved in it somehow, but there's a community center near my house where me and some friends, we went to, where they had a program called Project Hardcore. It doesn't exist anymore. It was an amazing program, but you know how funding works sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it really, that is what really got me into, like, I started to learn about issues that I never knew about, like a lot of like social justice type of issues, a lot of like environmental degradation issues. It made, I was finally like thinking about the world around me and not just this little bubble that I lived in my entire life where things kind of were just superficial and like who had more money than who had more than who, or who had like cooler friends than the other person. Like life started to make more like sense, had more purpose than just very superficial thing.
Wow.
And like that, it promoted me to like actually go and like research stuff. And then I was able to even like sometimes like in my classes, then when I like my favorite classes used to be like history and a little bit of geography and like law a little bit, because there are some interests in that for me. And I didn't feel like I was forced to just do math and like science, which I was still like relatively, I was terrible at math. I feel like I didn't. Like, I don't know. Like if I could get a C, I was like, that was the best moment of my
life. Right, right.
But I didn't have to like follow this system where like, if you aren't good at like math, then you're not like, oh, you're not smart or all that. Like, but I found out that I'm intelligent in other aspects.
Yeah.
And things that I'm more interested in rather than things that just like the system tells me like, oh, do this and then you'll be fine.
Right. So it was a period of discovery for you.
Yeah.
Self-discovery and empowerment, it almost sounds like, right? So that was in like high school range?
Yes, this was around like grade 9, grade 10.
Okay, just in time to then start thinking about post-secondary.
Yes. So yeah, my grades in grade 9 and 10 were, they're like subpar,
uh-huh.
not the best.
Uh-huh.
I've never actually got honor rolls until like my last year of high school. When it actually really mattered.
Yeah,
to, like, I was so scared. I remember like I was so stressed out. Like, I don't know if I'm even gonna get into York.
Oh yeah.
Like, I didn't know I was gonna get into any of my programs.
Right.
But then because I also got involved, that I never realized that actually made my application even better.
Yes.
So not only did I advance to somehow get some scholarships on top of that, but it was just of my involvement. My grades were nothing special.
Yeah. Yeah, the well-rounded individual.
Yeah.
Right? And then so you also mentioned in the video, thanks for elaborating on that, so you caught the learning bug. You also mentioned in the opening lines of the video, I didn't come from a family with a lot of money. What was it like growing up?
The thing is, before I was born, my dad was actually like making quite a bit of like money. He was working as a chemical engineer. But unfortunately, like when I was like really young, he got a stroke.
Mm.
And after that, it prevented him from not being able to like work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got really like toxic in the household, where like it led to like a divorce among my parents. And then we were always kind of like living in community like housing, and
mm-hmm.
still, my family still does.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do technically, but I'm usually just here at work. But
mm-hmm.
again, like we lived in like around like the Jane and Shepherd area. They even have like a name for it, like a hood name for it.
Right.
It's called like maze and stuff like that. We used to joke around like, oh, once you get in the hood, you can never get out.
Or like a maze.
No, they just called it maze because it's just so complicated.
Oh, okay.
It's just so complicated. And like, it wasn't like, I've seen like shootings outside my window. I've seen like my mom wouldn't even be comfortable with me going to the playground. It's literally like it's 2 minute walk from my place, and you can visibly see it.
Wow.
Even though like again, those are like most of it were just stereotypes, and like I see like a lot of people in the area as well. They kind of like perpetuate the same stereotypes, even though they're part of the same community.
Right.
Everyone will basically not trust anyone around them.
Uh-huh.
And then they realize like, oh wait, we're all like in the same boat.
So then what was it like to grow up in a neighborhood right beside a university, right? Adjacent to university.
Yeah.
In those circumstances, did you see, was your household one where, you know, it's expected to go to post-secondary, or what were those conversations like? And I know, you know,
because
there's no way to simplify this, but I just
because my dad went to post-secondary and back when he was in Sudan and all. My dad was an extremely intelligent individual.
Right.
But he never really, like, forced me to go into, like, post-secondary or anything. He'd always just make me reflect on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
powerful in itself.
Yeah,
reflection of, yeah.
Like, he would never, like, even when I was young, anytime he'd be disciplining me or when I'd go, and this is also one of the reasons why I believe that I consider myself very successful, and like, I was raised well because my father was really good at having conversations with me when I was younger. Like, when I would act out in school or do anything, it wasn't really like, oh, you're like grounded, or you're like, he never touched me, never physically hit me. He would really just like sit me down and just like, hey, like, let's talk about like what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what made you angry? What made you do this and all this kind of stuff? And then I just kind of like started to like, body that as I got older. Again, my father was a very, very smart man. He was just an individual who had certain circumstances that impacted him financially, and so therefore we ended up.
Well, for sure, a lot of his external pressures that impact the internal family life,
yeah.
Right? Thanks for sharing that. And so what did it mean to you then to get admitted to York at the time?
I was super excited. I thought I wasn't even going to get into university.
I just genuinely
didn't think it was like a thing. And then like I realized like, oh snap, I'm actually going to university.
Yeah.
Am I ready for it? I started to have like imposter syndrome where I felt like I wasn't, you know, I can barely like, I just managed to just barely like get through. And I was like, I'm probably not going to do it. I was like, you know what? As long as I can get 1A during my undergrad, I think I'm just fine.
Right. how was your undergrad? So now you're in your final year of social work, we're doing a looking back kind of activity. If you had to split your undergrad in a couple chapters, what would those chapter titles be?
So first year was a lot of learning and unlearning. What I loved again about the social work program is it makes you critically think about yourself, makes you critically think about your privileges, makes you critically think about just the way that you perceive others around you, perceive yourself. And I realized I had a lot of internalized racism.
Mm-hmm.
Like growing up, I felt like, again,
what is internalized racism, just for those who aren't familiar with the term, in your view? Yeah.
In my view, internalized racism is sort of like it's similar to like a self-hatred, is the best way I could say. People who look or share a similar identity as you kind of like start to degrade them, or you start to just think that you're better than them.
Right, right.
And sort of like,
right.
Sort of
yet you share some of those identities.
Exactly.
Okay, so you then, during the course of that first year of social work, because it's helping you self-reflect, you discovered you had some internalized racism.
Yes.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And like, it was able to like help me, like, again, like I used to think that like, you know, some of my friends who used to like, just like drop out or not even go to post-secondary, I felt like part of me, like that ego part of me, I felt like I was better than them.
Mm.
And then like, I'm glad I'm not like one, like you people.
Mm.
When in reality, it's like, you know, I had my own certain privileges. I had like reasons why I was able to make it, and they had their reasons why they were. And maybe some of them just weren't even interested in post-secondary and all that. When you, again, growing up in the school system that we had, it's kind of like, we're really like repeatedly kind of like conditioned in a way where school is kind of like not the like option for you.
Right.
You know? Like how we at York University, and I barely see any of the people that I grew up with. When everyone is like around the corner.
Down the street. Yeah.
And it makes no sense to me. Even if you look at the when I visibly see the black population at York, most of them are international students, not domestic.
Right.
And so they're kind of like...
This is some systemic barriers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's like a lot more, and then it's kind of like that aspect that I never, even if I have that internalized racism, I don't escape that identity. What people are going to see is a black man.
Yeah.
Regardless of how I feel about myself, right. And like, that's what people are going to see.
Right.
And the thing is, I'm not also black, I'm also Arab. Like, that's something I even started to like learn about myself. Right. I have multiple identities.
Yeah.
I'm a Sudanese Canadian.
Yeah.
And so therefore, like, again, in Sudan, and it's super weird in Sudan too, because like a lot of my family in Sudan don't consider themselves black. They just consider themselves Arab. While I grew up just considering myself black. So it's a...
Like, the locality,
yes,
makes a difference too.
Makes a very big difference. Yeah. And even my dad, he kind of like, he never really understood, he never kind of like, when he first came to Canada, he never really understood how like, why are these people treating me so like different? Because again, my dad grew up in Sudan. He didn't really have to grow up with like racism to that extent, because like in the part of Sudan that they're from, it's like when you're Sudanese Arab, you kind of like the dominant culture, the dominant like ethnic group.
So there's some additional privileges there.
Yeah, 100%. There is a privilege to being like a Sudanese Arab. When you have the Arab identity, and then he came here and like he's just being labeled as black. And he's like, I'm not just like you're like that's not what I am. And then it got to the point where I remember a conversation I had with my dad. I was in the car and he told me, he's like, Mutaba, I can never be friends with white people, but I don't want you to like have this type of like mentality that I have right now.
He acknowledged his own, and then
he acknowledged that he had all these like inner like I guess the best way to put it, inner demons that he was like working through due to all the racism and everything that he experienced.
Right.
And my dad was a pretty optimistic man, and he understood that like, it's really hard for him to change his mentality at the moment, but he would always encourage like me to like talk to different people. Don't just stay within like...
That's a next level self-awareness.
Yeah, he was an extremely intelligent man, and it's one of the reasons why I'm like in the mentality that I am, and I still go to him if I need like hear his opinion. Obviously, he's not a perfect individual. He has some problematic views, but even his problematic views, we are able to like talk about them.
Have dialogue.
Basically, we can have dialogue. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll be like, okay, I'm going to think about it. And sometimes he's like, no, I'm just going to stick to what I'm thinking. You do what you do.
But it's the you do what you do, which is interesting too.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, which is nice. I mean, I'm interpreting for me that it's been beneficial for you as well.
It has been very beneficial.
Yeah. So that first year, learning, unlearning, so part of those things that you were unlearning was, or yeah, tell me a bit more about that. You were saying the first chapter of your undergraduate degree.
I was really also unlearning this idea of what success meant. I really, really used to like, I was heavily dependent on like getting good grades.
Yeah.
I felt like if I wasn't getting good grades, then like what's the point of me being in university? Mm-hmm. And then I realized that like your grades don't matter that much. And maybe that was also maybe at the time of myself trying to convince myself that, because like my grades were like, I literally was just getting straight B's in my first year. I was, thank God I even got B's.
That's great.
Yeah, I was like, my first ever essay I handed in, I got a D. I was like, oh my God. I ran to the writing center like 2 weeks after.
Oh, you used it?
Yeah,
resources.
I used it immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
How
did you know about the writing center so early? I'm glad that you did.
I think what my prof told me about.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I just talked to my prof. I'm like,
oh, great.
I'm not good at this. And like, I acknowledge the fact that I wasn't like an academic,
right,
or quote unquote an academic at the time. And I was really, really like, I'm not afraid to be the worst person in the room. I'm not afraid to like
ask for help.
Yes.
For example.
Yeah. I'm not afraid to ask for help. I'm gonna ask for help. That's the only way I even made it past high school. That's one thing high school was able to teach me. The only reason why I got better in my reading, writing, and even sort of my math level is because I was asking for help all the time. I was literally like, my friends who were really good at writing, yo, what do? I want to know how you get good at writing.
Oh, very good.
And then like, I remember in my first year, all I was doing was writing notes. Anytime the professor spoke, I was just writing whatever they said. They could be saying, hi, good morning class, and I'll be writing good morning.
Right.
Like a robot. And then I realized that, actually I had a conversation with a friend. they talked about like learning like styles. I never knew like there's something called like auditory learning or tactical learning or visual learning. And then I did like the test randomly, like you found them like online, and I found out like, oh look, it looks like I'm better at auditory like learning. And then I just was like, it felt uncomfortable at first, but I just put my notebook away and I just sat down and I listened.
And it worked?
It worked. Wow. I was able to take it. I never took notes ever past first year.
Really?
Yeah, never.
Wow.
I just sit down and I listen.
So you're learning a lot about yourself, you're learning styles. I'm hearing that you have a great kind of ability to self, like you, to seek help. Like
yes.
You're in a timely manner. Oops, sorry. I got too excited. But you, in a timely manner as well, like you got that D immediately. You went to speak to the prof. I'm imagining like a few days later, you ended up at the writing center.
Exactly. My first week of school, I had 5 courses, but didn't have 4. I realized like, nope, I'm finishing my degree in 5 years.
And you make decisions very early.
I make decisions
based
very
on, early. You assess your progress and then you make decisions. Those are all really usually learning to learn skills that you're...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just, again, I'm really like, I'm trying to live my life as best as I can in the moment, but I'm still trying to work towards tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, again, like, putting this expectation on like, if I can barely do like 5 courses in 1 year, like, well, am I gonna like do that continuously? So I'm not, I didn't consider myself very good at writing and reading and all that kind of stuff. So I need more time. So what's the best way to get more time? Take less courses.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I have to graduate a year extra? That's fine with me. I'm not running towards anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know what I want to do in my life. So I'm going to take my time.
So it worked out for you. Wow.
Yeah,
it
really did.
So that was your first year?
Yes, that was my
first year. What's the next chapter of your journey?
So my second year was really changed by, I was kind of more comfortable with my grades.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what? I've gotten better at my reading and writing. I think I'm like getting it just in essays, you know. Citations are no longer like the bane of my existence.
Having my PhD, they're still.
And then I was like, all right, time to get more involved. Because like in the later half of my high school year, I was like, the reason why I enjoyed school was because I was involved. I just generally enjoyed it. And so there's this thing called leadership.
Yeah.
And I just saw it literally like, I think it was a poster or anything. And then I just applied. I didn't think much of it. I just applied, and then they asked me to come for an interview to like talk if I can come to this. I'm like, okay, like there's this guy who's walking in with a hoodie. He's like, all right, don't know what I'm getting myself into. It says it's a free trip. I'm gonna take as much free stuff as I can. And then went in there, talked, and then I went to leadership. It was an amazing experience for me.
Yeah, so that's a 6-day leadership retreat, intensive leadership retreat.
Very intense.
How did that impact you?
Changed me a lot.
Yeah.
I never like really understood, like I know like what leadership really like kind of like was in that aspect.
Uh-huh.
And like I think for me the biggest thing that I took away from it was like the people that I met. I met a lot of my connections through leadership. I even became a Don because of leadership.
I can say that.
It's because I never even knew what a Don was. I was a commuter. And then my roommate was actually a Don. And he just told me about the role. I'm like, yo, that's a sick idea. I'm
your leadership roommate was a Don?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
that was a connection.
Yeah, that was how it got. And then I'm like, what? I'm going to apply. Why not? This seems like a fun thing. And like, I didn't even know what a Don was at the time.
Yeah.
I was just like, yo, you live in residence. You get to like take care of people. I was like, you know, I want to be a social worker. I want to take care of people. So this might be good practice for me.
Yeah, I think in your video you said, because you want to be a social worker, there's some of the counseling skills.
Yes.
But you get to use some of those support skills as a Don.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
100%. That's what I was like, because I really was like, I spent a lot of my time talking to my roommate about like what a Don does. And he's like, it was like heavy, like support heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I literally went into that interview kind of like, yo, I'm doing this job because I want to like support people. Like, this is like, I want to like gain those skill set and that ability. I want to learn from people. And like, I was ready to even be just put into the most like difficult building for like support and all that.
Awesome, awesome. So your second year was leadership and then getting connected to more opportunities.
Yeah.
That took you into your third year.
Yes.
Yes,
in my second year also, that's when I also did a SAND. It was also another leadership retreat.
Yeah.
I was kind of like on the high of leadership retreats on that. Yeah, like, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Go to one, go to another.
Yeah.
I started to spend more time at York besides just like hanging out with my friends outside of Europe. And so I started to like, I still worked on myself academically. I was still trying to like do my readings and all that kind of stuff. And then I transitioned to my third year, which was my first year of doctorate. That was a very like hectic experience for me.
Oh yeah.
Like I never lived on my own before.
Oh right? Wow.
Yeah.
Now you're taking care of, well, you're one of the support people for a bunch of people who may
yes.
not have lived by themselves
exactly.
before.
And I was learning how to live by myself when every single person in my team had already done it at least once.
Right.
And it's kind of hilarious. The first, I think the first week, some of my teammates still like make fun of me for it, but I clogged the toilet with paper towels.
Oh.
Because I was cleaning the...
Oh.
I didn't know,
you didn't know that
it
doesn't go down the...
So some of my coworkers' first shift was cleaning, was coming to my bathroom and like, I'm clogging the toilet.
Oh, that's
so,
funny.
Yeah, so it was like, I felt so like, again, like my first couple of months.
Wow, the huge transition.
Huge transition. I was like, really like, that was the height of my imposter syndrome. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Right.
I'm like causing problems for my team. I don't feel like I can support people. Like, and again, I predominantly grew up in a black community.
Uh-huh.
And in the residence I was at with Winters, it's again predominantly like small town, like a lot of them are either international students or they're white.
Mm-hmm.
And so like just being able to like adapt
mm-hmm.
to their personalities, and again they're also arts kids, so arts kids have they're even almost more unique of a personality,
another subculture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I can't relate to these people. I like it was very tough. I even had in my first shift I was dealing with some like a medical situation, and the person literally told me like, I don't want help from your kind. And
oh,
I was like, yeah, like I was like super like the I was anxious. I was
wow.
Like I had sometimes like I felt like I had residents who were even like running away from me at the time and all that kind of stuff. And again, there are times when I felt like, yo, like, what am I doing here? Like, part of me even like wanted to just like, all right, no, it's not for me.
I hear you. Yeah.
Then I was like, well, I'm just gonna push through this. I'm gonna keep trying, like, you know what, this is if I'm gonna work in social work field, I better get used to this stuff.
Right, that's true, yeah.
And so I got better at adapting. I was able to like I realized a lot of the issues were also like my own insecurities.
Right.
And like I did have like a lot of issues growing up with like the way that I felt like I had to always prove to people that I wasn't a scared person.
Mm.
Like I actually like there was a point in my time that it wasn't actually until last year. I don't think from grade 10 to last year I was able to like wear a hoodie like in public
and feel comfortable about it. You mean?
I feel comfortable.
Yeah, because you're saying you felt like you constantly had to prove that you're not a scary person.
Yes. Because I remember even back in like high school. I literally was playing tag with like friends of myself because I looked a lot like, again, my clothes were a lot more like hand-me-downs. Like I had like very like big like jackets. I was like around like 200 pounds. I was like, again, I literally looked like a very like stereotypical like what you would see in the on the news like as a black person.
Mm.
And so, which is again, that's a whole different issue and a problem that society has.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Because I fit that visual stereotype, people treated me that way. Like I would have like people follow me in the stores. I would have I couldn't play with my friends without like an adult being like, is this old man? Why is this old man chasing you and all this kind of stuff? Because I looked visibly older when I was in high school too.
So then being a Don, now being in a position where you're like, I'm here to support you, and then grappling internally, but pretend and visibly in reality,
yeah,
with these negative biases and stereotypes was a challenge.
It was, and because like even then I still like I did a lot of work on my visual appearance to seem more like quote unquote acceptable for other people. I did lose a lot of weight. I take more time to what I wear and like and all that kind of stuff, so I don't. And again, that's like, I shouldn't have to.
Right,
but
I know it's big topics. Yeah, we're touching on. Yeah.
Yeah, but I did what I needed to do to like adapt,
mm-hmm.
and even then I still felt like again that those lingering insecurities don't just disappear overnight,
mm-hmm.
and like I still felt that way. Like I always like Like, I literally, before I always left my room, I had to, like, would I run away if I saw this person? Mm-hmm. Again, that also came back to the internalized racism and all that kind of stuff that I was feeling, because I felt like, you know, like, hey, people didn't do certain things, people wouldn't treat me like this.
Right.
And again, there's just a lot of stuff to unpack.
Yeah, a lot of layers, yeah.
And I'm still unpacking. Like, I still have, like, a lot of these, like I always have to, like, catch myself with, like, certain views that come into my mind, because, like, maybe it's a I do acknowledge that it's a defense mechanism sometimes, but I do want to be a part of that change.
Yeah, so where are you at now when you, like, look, you look in the mirror, you're about to do you're about to step out of your room. Where's your mindset at now?
I don't feel like I have to, like prove to people I'm not scary anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, for me now, like, I just, like, again, that actually helped me develop, like, an interest in, like, fashion. Mm. I wish I had more money to explore that interest more, but I work with what I got.
Yeah, you work with what you got. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, like, again, like, I like to, like, dress the way that I want to dress.
Awesome.
And so, yeah.
No, yeah, but it's an important part of your experience. So in third year, because you were done, it was very intense. You're coming to terms with all of those things. Mm-hmm. But your program, social work, also gives you a better platform to think about it, analyze it academically too, right?
Exactly. Like, social work was, I love the combination of dawnship and social work.
Yeah,
like, the theory, everything that I learned in the classroom, I could just go literally, like 5 minutes away to work where in residence and apply what I might theory.
So clearly, it must have gone, you must have decided it was good enough to stick through, like it worked enough, worked well enough, a good fit for you, because I think you did a couple years of dawnship.
Yes. So
now you're a senior dawn.
Yes, yeah. I'm kind of like the senior dawn of the building where I first started.
Yeah.
So I started off in third year at Winters, then I went to Tatum, and then now I'm back at Winters.
Uh-huh.
And the growth from my first year of the dawn to who I am now, that person in third year, I believe, is completely unrecognizable.
Mm.
I believe those insecurities, that imposter syndrome that I had, and that anxiousness that I had anytime I'll be on shift or I'll be talking to my residents or my coworkers, no longer exists.
Wow. And now you're a team lead.
Yes. Yeah, it's like it goes to show, like, what can happen if you just, like, kind of sometimes put yourself through fire. And
so would you say, for the imposter syndrome in this case, would you say that the main tip, again, I know we're reducing these a little simplistically to tips, but was it to stick through the, what did you say, something about the fire? Like,
it's kind of like steels forged in fire.
Yeah, forged in the fire. Would you say, like, stick through it, or what other things help? And I know you had the social work to help you reflect on it. What other things?
I would say
helped.
What helped as well, really, like, yes, sticking through things that are difficult, but really, like, sitting down and, like, asking yourself, like, this is really what I want to do. I don't believe in doing things that you don't, like, want to do, or live a life that you don't need to do it. Like, if you don't like your program at York, you generally aren't interested in it, or don't want to study what you're studying, like, I would, like, change it.
Or
just don't do it at all.
Yeah.
Or, like, I remember once I was working at Ruthie's Aquarium as, like, retail.
Uh-huh.
And one day I woke up and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. And there's literally no benefit for me anymore. I don't care, like, if I get paid or not from this. Like, I just literally went into work one day and, like, I'm quitting. And then I just went out, I gave them my 2 weeks notice, and I was just trying to give away as many of my shifts as I can.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to wake up and not do what I want to do.
Right, yeah. It's got to tie to an extent to your sense of purpose.
Exactly.
Right?
And I know that when it came to dawnship, a lot of those insecurities and all stuff, I still, like, I know I like the job. Like, it wasn't like I was, like, there's that part of me that was always, like, ready to, like, okay, time to challenge myself today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm not, like, you know, if I fail today, I fail today. I'm going to feel bad about it. I might have to, like, lock myself in my room for, like, a day, but
uh-huh.
I'm gonna wake up the next morning and try to do better.
Right.
And that really, like, would help me, like, progress in the role.
Right.
And I had people around me, like, other dons who were, like, very, like, supportive.
Nice.
And, like, I could have conversations with them and learn from them. And that's what I did. I tried to learn from the people around me as much as I can. That's why I try to, like, talk to as many people as I can. Because it's very important. I really think every single person that you meet has something to offer you. And just, like, this, or even just listening to their stories. Listening to people's stories is very, like it's very fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah, like this podcast.
Like, whether you agree with someone or disagree, or whether you think they have anything to, like, quote unquote, have anything to offer you, like, you can still gain something, whether it's, could be entertainment, could be a value, could be a way of life.
Knowledge, yeah. Skill, perspective.
Exactly. Like, there's so much you can gain from just being able to have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And I think because, like, I've been fortunate enough to just, like, meet and talk to so many different people at York, I've been able to, like, experience and, like, learn a lot of different stuff.
100%.
And I feel like I'm just a collection of, like, a lot of other people's experiences and ideas, and I just formed it into, like, suit me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I learned more from, like, my peers and other students at York University than I did from, like, professors and all that. Not saying that there are some professors I learned a lot from, but, like, it's literally university is about being, is having dialogue with other students and, like, yo, how do you do, like, how do you do certain things? Like, back then, like, my first year as a dom, I did not know how to cook. So I had a friend who literally, like, taught me about, like, yo, what seasonings to do and all that kind of stuff. And, like, now I love cooking.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. It's the student experience is the totality of the experience, mm-hmm. right? And the experience is, at least in part, what you make of it.
Yeah.
And who you talk to, who you choose to listen to, who you choose to interact with, right? The opportunities you choose or to take, mm-hmm. and that are available to you, obviously. Right?
Yeah.
And clearly, not everything is always available, but there's a buffet, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you define, think about, or articulate student success?
Student success is whatever you want it to be. Uh-huh. I like to really say, take everything that people say, including myself, and in this podcast, take it everything said with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to just critically think about, like, what people say to them, what you say to yourself sometimes, what you're learning. Again, we have, like, sometimes, like, for me, I used to think that, like, profs, teachers knew everything.
Yeah.
My parents knew everything.
Mm.
And it wasn't until, like, I really just learned, again, social podcasts, like, yo, critically think about, like, what you're learning. Like, are you sure this is the right way? Like, think about, like, the system that you're following right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing your program because your parents told you to? Or are you doing this program because you truly want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And even if it is, does it align? Does it not align?
Mm-hmm.
Are you not talking to a certain person because another person told you not to talk to them? Or are you not talking to them because, like, you decided to do it yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I really encourage people to just, like, open up their mind and just, like, critically think about it. Think about the system. Think about what you even want to do in your life. Like, are you someone who really just wants to own a house and just, like, settle down? Or are you someone who just wants to travel all the time? Like, for myself, I literally thought I was just going to go buy a house. Like that was my goal. Like, you know, once I buy the house, like, you know, success. There we go. That's success. I bought a house. Good. No, I'm comfortable with, like, I might be a nomad. I don't know. I might just, like, travel the world.
Open.
Exactly. Like, I don't need to settle down. Maybe I'll just be a citizen of the earth. I don't know. But I'm like, just do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to, like, enjoy it tomorrow. You can enjoy it today.
Right.
Work towards tomorrow, but you can enjoy it today.
So, work towards tomorrow, but enjoy it today. So what should the goal of universities, colleges, or be in order to promote that kind of critical thinking you're talking about? Or what conditions should be in place?
I think the emphasis on grades
mm-hmm.
shouldn't be so high.
Mm-hmm.
I think this idea of competition between, like, students is, like, silly.
Mm-hmm.
You're not competing with anyone except yourself. Like, there's we don't live in, like, some utopia. There's always going to be work. There's always going to be something that needs to be changed. It's kind of like finding your spot in that change, you know? Like, if you're competing for, like, an accounting job at, like, this firm, I'm like, why, like, find another firm. Like, what's the big deal? Like, just do what you need to do. And again, the people around you don't have, they're all connections. I see everyone that I meet as a connection rather than competition. I'm not worried about my friend getting a job over me or all that kind of stuff. If they get a job over me, sure, why not? Like, but they're still now their connection in that job. If another opportunity opens up in that job, then they got my back.
That's a fascinating perspective. I like that. Yeah. It's connection over competition.
Yeah.
And even if they were your competition, now they are your connection.
There we go. Now I have someone in the system with me.
Mm.
I'll always be happy for my friends. I had my friend Like, it was even like if I didn't even senior down, my friends got senior down. Awesome, yo, that's amazing. I'm glad my friend managed to get it. Then I'm just going to go do something else and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Thank you. So, what are some of the things in your life which have made the success you enjoy easier or more difficult?
A lot of my difficulties, again, my childhood and everything was filled with a lot of poverty and a lot of loneliness. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of time to myself to think. I was always a thinker. I didn't, like, I always used to just, like, put music on. It was a form of, like, meditation for me. Just, like, reflect on my day. Like, what can I do tomorrow to, like, make myself better? And I really also, what helped me a lot is, like, I was just really, really lucky with some good people in my life growing up.
Uh-huh.
Whether it wasn't just mom, but just my dad, but, like, some of my friends I grew up in middle school. And, like, we used to, some of the most deep conversations I had were with some of my friends, because we used to work caretaking over the summer when we were in, like, grade 9, no, grade 10, 11, and 12. And, like, during our breaks or even during our shift, we just talk about life.
Nice.
We talk about, like, our aspirations. We even started getting more into, like, books and all that. I never, before, like, back then, it was like, yo, books are not, like, I was like, yo, but there's some dope books that you can actually listen to and, like, can give you a lot of information. And we just, like, yo, what kind of, like, future do you want to live? I want to live this, like, you know? And then, like, it got to that point where me and my friends, like, a lot of us, like, when it came to, like, toxic masculinity and, like, men not being able to, like, share their feelings, like, we all kind of, like, collectively agreed, like, yo, screw that. Let's just, like, yo, I'm sad today. I'm going to talk about it.
Wow.
And, like, we kind of, like, talked about it to the point, like, yo, what can we do tomorrow to, like, be better in that aspect?
Wow. Yeah, you had, like, a little mastermind group with those friends there.
100%.
You know, very early on, 9, 10, 11, 12.
All this I accomplish, or all my successes, is thanks to a lot of the people that I've met. Again, there's only so much information that you can learn by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But speaking to other people, learning from other people's experiences adds to you.
Would that be one of your main, like, again, tips for perhaps students who are listening right now?
100%. Again, whether you disagree with someone's lifestyle or not, take it in, like, it's like literally, like, I know, like, people say it a lot, putting someone in your shoes, but, like, literally just, like, picture what you would do and, like, see if it's, like, a lifestyle that would suit you as well in that aspect. Like, when people tell me, like, oh, I want to own a house and, like, drive a nice car and all that kind of stuff, I'll literally sometimes, like, visually, like, see myself doing that stuff. I'm like, now I don't feel any more happier than I am now.
you do a pulse check.
I do a check, and I feel like there's no, like, desire for me to do that.
But it's that reflection that's important, right?
Exactly.
It gives you information about where you... Yeah, you're not judging another person or anything. Mm-hmm. You're just saying, okay, well, how do I see that? And that gives you information for your sense of purpose, doesn't it?
Exactly. And there's no reason to judge anyone.
No.
Like, I feel like people are already, like, judgmental enough to one another. We already judge ourselves more than enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, let people do what they want to do. And, like, again, like, your journey is your journey. You're only competing with yourself.
So let's talk about peaks and valleys in your student journey.
Yes.
What were some of the times when you felt most engaged in student life,
mm-hmm.
and least engaged? When I say student life, it's academic or corporate.
I felt, so again, this was, like, it was progressive. So my first year and my second year, a lot of my time was spent with my friends outside of here.
Yeah.
I would spend a lot of time with friends from middle school and high school, because that was what I was comfortable with.
Yeah.
Even though, like, and again, a lot of them weren't doing school at the time. So I was just like, oh, you know, I'm just going to go, like, hang with them. I don't know too much people at work. And then, like, it got to a point where, like, we're kind of, like, doing the same things over and over again. And then, yo, I need a little bit more variety. And yes, was it hard to disconnect myself from them in, like, that aspect? Yeah. I had to, like, step out of my comfort zone. I had to walk into literally, like, again, leadership was a retreat. I knew no one in there.
Yeah.
Absolutely no one. I had to talk about my deepest, darkest secrets to all these people. But leadership was good at doing that.
For me. Yeah.
But, yeah, and then, like, I just kind of, like, went with the flow. Like, kept on trying to meet as many new people as I can, and I just started to change.
Right. Awesome. Thank you. What are some of the skills that you developed along the way throughout your student journey?
Like
employability skills that you look forward to using.
I am confidence. Confident. I truly believe, like, for myself, like, all I really need to get any job that I kind of need is, like, confidence and connections. I think most of my experiences, because of can be applied to like most jobs that I want to do.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm like, if I desire something, like truly, I will learn and I'll try to get it.
It sounds like with the words that come to mind, like grit and growth mindset. You kind of like, you're like, I know I can do this.
Yeah.
Everything, Marie Forleo, everything is figure outable. You're going to figure it out.
100%. And if I don't figure out, it meant I didn't want it bad enough.
That's your motto.
Yeah, that's my motto.
It's one of your mottos.
If I fail and I don't try again, it's because I want it bad enough.
Wow, awesome. What other mottos are, do you have a life philosophy?
A life philosophy. I guess like, live your best life.
Yeah.
I guess it's something I like to tell people, and like, I'm always living my best life.
Yeah.
And if I'm not, you know something's up.
So when something's up, what happens to you when things get really hard in life?
Recently, I was actually very I was feeling very like discouraged with my placement. I felt like, again, this was like one of those moments where now I'm like the worst person in the room. Again, I'm with a lot of coworkers who I've been working with, like just let people know. So I work as a social worker for my placement at Covenant House, and it was somewhere I always wanted to work. Like I always thought that was like, it was like, you could say it was like a dream placement or a
yes.
dream job, quote unquote. And then when I actually got there, I realized like it wasn't everything I thought it would be. I don't mean like the work that they do, but I meant like my role in the work that they do. I didn't realize it would be a lot more. Like, I knew it was going to be draining, but I didn't know it would be like to that point where it would make me start to like feel a little bit more like I didn't care as much. It felt like sometimes I would go to work and I just didn't care about my clients and all that kind of stuff as much because I was just so drained.
Yes.
And I recently, like, having a conversation with a friend of mine, it came to my conclusion that I have compassion fatigue.
Yeah. Because if your emotional reserves are low, you have no more to give.
Exactly. And I realized, like, I was looking around, like, my placement, and I feel like my coworkers are also burnt out. Like, I know, or they're going through some sort of compassion fatigue as well. And it just felt like what's going on? Like, I felt like there's this part of me that, like, yo, like, I'm failing my clients, or I'm not meeting the expectations that I had for myself. And I'm still, again, because this is still so fresh, I'm still kind of, like,
Making sense of it all,
but I'm still very hopeful. Like every week, if I need to take a day off, I take a day off. Like I took this past Friday off to literally just gather my thoughts. I'm like, okay, I'm going back in Tuesday. What type of like mindset or goals should I set for myself when I'm going into placement tomorrow? How can I like get out of this like rut or this like stagnation that I'm feeling?
Yeah.
And so like I have a plan to like, you know, I'm gonna like introduce a program to my supervisor that I want to maybe implement, have a conversation with him. I want to, like, with specific clients, like, try something different with them, not make myself feel as, like, drained. Maybe, like, I used to kind of get caught up in, like, the negativity aspect of it. And then, like, I want to, like, see if, like, I'm a very optimistic person, but when I go to work, I don't feel optimistic.
Right.
So that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, what's preventing me from bringing my optimism and this, like, positivity that I have here? So I'm kind of trying to find ways to do that. Like, again, like, I don't have the answer right now. I'm still like reflecting.
Yeah.
But like,
I admire your that you're trying to problem solve and initiate. You're like, okay, how can I do better on Tuesday?
Yeah.
And you're owning it.
Yeah, 100%. Like,
yeah.
I'm an insecure person. I have like insecurities. I'm not. Yeah, I feel like I've done amazing things. I think I've had a successful like university career, but I like how do I put this? I'm still not like anything special.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm nothing special. Like I just did great in a certain aspect of my life, and like now it's time to go and do things.
It's a different circumstance, a different context.
Exactly.
You don't apply the same standard that of 5 years of university. Of course, you're at a certain place in university, but here you're like in a new environment, so you don't apply that same expectation. Or you do, but then you realize like, oh, you gotta adjust.
Mm-hmm.
But what in addition to that, what I admire is you're also owning that you're part of the solution that you're proposing it to your supervisor, for example.
I want to be a part of the solution.
Yeah.
Again, like if it comes to that point where I don't see myself being part of the solution anymore, it's not for me.
Then you go back to that thing you said at the beginning where it's like, is this still where I want to be? Mm-hmm. If yes, then let's find a way to push through. If not, let's see what else I can do.
Exactly. Like, I'm not afraid to, like, yes, Covenant House is a well, like, if I were to, like, get hired with them and all that kind of stuff, like, it would be a well-paying social work job. But if it's not for me, I'm not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, I'm not, like, again, I've convinced myself, like, I'm not worried about, like, finding, like, a job in the future. I'm worried about finding a job that I like in the future.
Mm.
And, like, I'm a pretty employable guy. I think I'm pretty employable.
Yeah.
I like myself. Yeah, I think I'm pretty confident with that.
I'm worried about finding a job that I like. Okay, it says it in that statement, that you've got this inner confidence. You're like, I'll find a way.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
I'm not worried about being unemployed for a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find my way back up.
Cool. So then on maybe this question is redundant, maybe you just answered it, but what's next for you? What are some of the things you're looking forward to?
So I'm actually...
Post-student life.
Post-student life. This is actually a very big question. I recently was sitting with some friends around a month ago, and like when I don't have schoolwork or I don't have placement, or I'm not just like socializing with people, I really have to, like, I'm like, yo, what do I do? I caught myself like either just playing video games or just like watching Netflix.
Right.
I'm like, yo, do I have any personal projects that I want to work on?
Uh-huh.
And then I realized, like, yo, let me try getting into writing. Because I used to have like an interest in like writing and all that kind of stuff, but I never like sat down and did it. So literally I wrote down in like this like little like journal I have in my my phone. I'm like, okay, from like 3:00 to 3:20, write
nice.
Some sort of like fiction, like thing that I'm interested in. And then it turned from
Fiction too.
Yeah,
100%.
Oh, wow. It was like fiction work.
Wow.
Like fiction work. Like fantasy writing.
Whoa.
And then I just sat down like, again, I'm still insecure with my writing.
Sure.
But like it's kind of like, hey, you know what? Only one way to break your insecurity is to like work through it.
Yeah,
so,
that's your motto, right?
Yeah. That 20 minutes turned to 30 minutes to 40 minutes, and I was doing it for an hour, and then I had to cap myself.
How do you become a writer? Right.
Yeah, there we go.
You're already a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. By the way, I was looking at some stuff on LinkedIn Learning. You know, you have a free subscription because you're a university student.
Yeah.
There's some excellent courses on writing.
Really?
Yeah, like really, really practical stuff.
Okay.
Take a look.
Okay, I'm gonna take a look.
I didn't look at fiction writing, but I'm sure it's there. Yeah, yeah. So you're writing.
Yeah.
So where do you want to see this writing go? I know you're just doing it
for now,
fun
I'm,
right now, but
I'm just trying.
That's
to
good.
Create,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to create a world that's in my head. I'm just like put it on paper. Will I publish it? Will I not publish it? I don't know. I never thought that far.
Yeah, you're doing it for the sake of it.
Just doing it for the sake of it right now.
Love it.
I also like, again, I love games, specifically board games. So I'm trying to like take, this was actually, I developed this idea recently when I was applying to my master's. I'm trying to take this idea of board games and make them educational. So literally, in my last, so my class right now, I was taking, we had to do a creative piece for our assignment. And then I'm like, yo, let me just make a board game. Because like, I was like, you know, like, I'm not an artist. I'm not like, I never really considered myself some, I can't draw. I'm not very good at like the visual arts type of stuff. But I think I'm pretty creative when it comes to like making like games and all that kind of stuff. So in the project, we just had to take a policy and just like present it to the class. So I just basically kind of like took that policy and turned it into a simulation, like a live simulation thing. And I made the board game, I made the cards and all that kind of stuff with my group members. Like I pitched the idea and then made it and then I presented it and like people were like engaged with it. They're having fun.
I'm sure. Wow. That's cool. You know how you said you were at the arts college?
Yeah.
Right? Maybe, you know, there's some kind of transfer of
maybe
you've always been a creative person.
Maybe.
Creativity expresses itself in so many different ways, right?
Indeed.
You've got writing going, creating a game. You also just slipped in that you applied for your master's.
Yes.
What's that? What program is?
I'm
if you want to share.
100%. I'm applying to my MSW at York University.
Okay.
An MSW at Western, and a Master's of Education at Laurier, specifically for student affairs, because again, I really like the whole aspect of working with university students and just working with students in general. Like, I don't see myself being a teacher,
right,
but I still see myself being an educator.
Yeah, actually, that happened to me in my fourth or fifth year too. I saw education as teaching
yeah.
only, but then I discovered this other field, right? Very cool. Yeah, you can do it in different ways. You can do it as a social worker. You can do it as a nurse. You can do it as anything, right? Educator,
yeah.
but also in post-secondary, student affairs or other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, awesome. Do you have is there anything else you want to share about yourself or that you want to share a message to the university community? So we have students, staff, faculty maybe listening to the podcast.
I guess I really do acknowledge that. I think I've done a lot. If you look at my resume or you talk to me, you might get this impression that this guy's done a lot. I'm nothing special. It's just that I've taken other people's experiences, embodied it, and just learned from it. And I'm just living life the way I want to live. I think anyone who truly lives the way they want to live will basically kind of reach this point. Again, take what I say with a grain of salt.
For sure. Yeah, anything, right? But,
I'm not an expert at anything.
Yeah.
But
we'll trust that people are using their critical thinking.
Exactly. And I love her. I'm not afraid to be the worst. Again, I said this before, I'm not afraid to be the worst person in the room. And I truly believe you can learn from anyone. I've learned from my clients at social work. I've learned from my residents. I've learned from my coworkers. I've learned from random people I've met on the street. Just from random interactions and on the bus or something.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what interaction you have to inspire you to do something else. And I don't know. I'll see where the future takes me.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Mishtaba. I love learning from you. So thanks for having this conversation. Thanks for being on this podcast. And we wish you all the best.
Awesome. Thank you, David.
Thank you.